I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. We've been Disney fans our entire lives. And now, as childless adults, we're undertaking a journey through the media that shaped our lives.
Trying to find out if what made them special is still there.
We are Rewatching the Magic.
Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
Bit random question. I don't think you probably do, but do you like dogs?
No, I absolutely loathe them. They need to get out of my house. There's one that sleeps in my bed every night, and it just annoys me so much. No, I love dogs. Big dog lover over here. So this week has been fun. Last weekend, this week has been fun.
Oh, yeah, another dog movie. Thanks to our friend Cornflake, we are reviewing 101 Dalmatians, the original 1961 film. I forgot about, well, we have this here. We actually have sort of a sponsor for this week's show. When we announced last week that we were going to do 101 Dalmatians, I got an email saying that they wanted to sponsor our show, and small podcast, anything will take. So this week's episode is sponsored by Canine Crunchies. Yes. All dogs, from toy chihuahuas to Great Danes, love Canine Crunchies. Chock full of vital food elements, Canine Crunchies keeps your dog feeling fit and looking trim. Try all three delicious flavors, Atlantic Salmon, Island Stag, and Pheasant Under Glass. For a deeper bark, sharper nose, and shinier coat, give your dog Canine Crunchies.
Canine Crunchies can't be beat, they make each meal a special treat. Happy dogs are those who eat nutritious Canine Crunchies.
And remember, that's Canine Crunchies with a K.
And for you cat lovers, there is a new product coming out called Feline Finchies. Look for that at your local pet store.
The all bird flavored Feline Finchies.
Yes. That's enough of that bit. But before we really, there's a method that I talked about last week that kind of starts with this movie. And to really get that story, I'm going to try to tell it as quickly as I can. We do have to go back to a little movie called Sleeping Beauty. Now, of the Walt era, without a doubt, Sleeping Beauty is the best looking movie of that era. No question. That is the best looking movie. The best animated of the Walt era. And the most expensive. It almost bankrupted the studio to the point where they were considering not doing animation anymore. Completely getting rid of animation because it was too expensive. And this is Roy Disney, Walt's brother, telling Walt, yeah, we can't afford to do these cartoons anymore. We have the park. We have TV. We have our live-action movies. Let's just focus on them and not do cartoons anymore. Until Ub Iwerks, we've talked about him before. He is the co-creator of Mickey Mouse. Modified a Xerox machine. Not kidding.
For those of you younger than us, a Xerox machine. I'm serious. You don't really see those anymore.
Yeah.
Not in the old way, unless you work in certain types of office settings. Big offices still have Xerox machines. The school where I work, of course, we need to copy lots of paper and tests and things, so we have huge industrial copy machines, but they're getting more and more rare and are usually now bundled with computer printers. But at the time were, basically take a picture and print it immediately, in a lot of ways. And it wasn't, more important to what we're talking about today. It wasn't exactly what we would call today a lossless process. anytime you Xeroxed something, it was always of a lower quality. And the more that you copied it, the worse copy you got.
Yeah, so basically the old ways of Disney animation was the animators drew every frame on paper, every single frame. They would send every frame to their inking department, and the inkers would trace, literally trace the drawing onto an animation cell and then send it to be painted. And that was a very time-consuming and very expensive process. And they couldn't do it anymore. And again, Sleeping Beauty, to make that look as beautiful as it did, and the man, not even the man, because there were definitely women who worked in the inking painting department. The person hours, the men and women who were doing this all day, every day, that cost money. So they modified a Xerox machine to cut that time almost in half by taking the drawing that the artist made and literally photocopying it onto the animation cell. That saved time, that saved money, but as Kiki said, the quality started to dip. This is where Disney's animation starts to dip in their quality. And in certain scenes, especially with the puppies in this movie, where you can actually see the sketch lines. Like, there was one part where one of the puppies, you could actually see the cross of where they were doing the nose and eyes.
Yeah, since we're talking about animation style, first off, I'm just going to say, you know, once again, I've been personally watching these things on via Disney Plus on a 4K ultra high def television set. And for most of the movies we watch, this comes out very beautiful, even the older movies. Mm-hmm. This movie did not do well in that setting. You can see every little bit of the cut corners. It is, the outlines are inconsistent. Some of them are incredibly blurry. Like at some point I thought maybe like my internet connection had messed up, but it's actually the outlines of the characters did not transfer perfectly. And this happened a lot if you used a lot of old Xerox machines, industrial Xerox machines. And I've had to do it for so many jobs with some very specialized copy machines. I used to have a job that was just photocopying building blueprints on a specialized Xerox machine. And no matter how, you know, cleanly you do it and how perfectly you think you're doing it, sometimes the machine fuzzes those lines and you get this very, you know, thin lines become thick lines or some of the ink smears in the transfer. And that every bit of that comes across on a UHD TV these days, and a lot of the inking process, there are some parts where like the spots of the Dalmatians bleed into the backgrounds. Like, it almost looks like in a live action movie when a green screen transfer doesn't go too well, like when somebody has like a spot of green on their clothing and it blends in with the chroma key background and you can kind of see the whatever the chroma key background is through the person. That a similar effect happens in 101 Dalmatians with the spots on the dogs, and it is really distracting. And not the quality you expect from Disney.
Yep. And Walt hated it for that very reason, the visual quality dip. But the animators loved it because it was their sketches actually on screen and not someone's copy of their work, someone tracing their work. It was their work. So, yeah, it worked for the animators. Didn't really work well for Disney. And they did that up until we talked about Oliver and Company last week. That was the last movie to use it before the entire studio moved over to the CAP system and did everything digitally. And looking at Little Mermaid compared to 101 Dalmatians, definitely an upgrade.
Yeah, we talked about how well the Renaissance movies hold up visually. Mm. And it was interesting to see, you know, Little Mermaid versus Oliver and Company for that reason. Because it was just like, you know, one movie before.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing in that new process improved the visual quality so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I am not a fan of this process. I understand that it cut the labor for the movie and it sped up production. And in general, I would be for that. As long as nobody's safety is on the line, I'm okay with things that, you know, cut a corner here or there to speed up production in general. But No, I don't think Ub was at his best with this idea. It
saved the studio.
It did. You know, you do have to weigh it on that one. You're correct. But when you think of a beautiful Disney movie, I like this movie, but it's a little difficult to get through because some of the animation is kind of eye-crossingly bad at points.
1961's 101 Dalmatians, based off the book of the same name by W. Smith.
Almost the same name.
Yeah, it was The 101 Dalmatians. Speaking of the way it's spelled in the book and the way it's spelled in the film, it was really hard to search for this movie on Disney Plus.
I actually thought, I contacted Tuesday in a panic and was like, this is not on Disney Plus, where can I find it? And he had to tell me that you have to look, you have to search O-N-E instead of the numbers 101. Even though the splash card for it, the icon for it, has the number 101. Originally, it was spelled out using the full words instead of the digits. So you have to search for O-N-E or just Dalmatians if you can spell it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the numbers until the live-action remake with Glenn Close. Yeah, and there's been a lot of spinoffs for this one. There was the book got a sequel called The Twilight Bark, named after the actual thing in the first book. There was a TV show that was called 101 Dalmatians. It was an animated show. There's a current animated show called 101 Dalmatian Street, which takes place in the modern day, and the original movie does take place in the 60s. So it's the descendants of the original 101 Dalmatians.
Ooh, with as long as dogs live, that would have to be like their great, 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 great. I don't even know what.
And somehow Cruella de Vil is still alive.
Well, humans do live longer than dogs, and we don't exactly know how old she was.
She has to be like in her 70s by now, at least.
Well, yes, by now she'd be fairly old, but she was supposed to be originally a schoolmate of Anita's, so she would theoretically be roughly of same age as Anita.
Mm-hmm.
And Anita looked to be somewhere in her 20s.
And of course there was the live action movies with Glenn Close and the sequel that came after it that was not very good. So yeah, and of course there was an animated sequel to this movie that we don't talk about because direct video animated sequels are not the best.
Yeah.
But let's get to this movie, the original 1961 101 Dalmatians. There's a bit of a cast in here, at least for this. Of names that we've talked about before. Kiki, do you want to go through them?
Yeah, we are not going to go through this entire cast, because there's like a good 30 named people in this cast, so no. But there are a few names we have talked about before. Playing the one I really want to talk about, playing the captain, who is a horse who aids the puppies. We've got Thurl Ravenscroft back again.
Yep.
We've talked about him before. You know him best as Tony the Tiger, the man who sang "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." And he, of course, did work on the attractions for Haunted Mansion, Country Bear Jamboree, Mark Twain's Riverboat, Pirates of the Caribbean, Tiki Room, etc. So long Disney legacy there. Mm-hmm. Speaking of another Disney legacy, we've got Mary Wicks as Freckles, who is one of the puppies, the one that has the freckly spots on her nose. We talked about her before because Mary Wicks' final role we talked about before, which was one of the gargoyles in The Hunchback of Notre Dame. She was Laverne the Gargoyle.
That's a lifespan, because she was a kid in this movie, when this movie was being made.
She was not. She was not a kid when this movie was being made. She was born in 1910, and this movie was made in the 1960s.
Definitely sounds like a kid, though.
She does have a very youthful sound as Freckles, but she was also the live action animation reference model for Cruella in this movie, because at the time she was very slender, had this very wiry frame, and so they used her body shape and her movements as an animation reference for the animators for Cruella. She had a very long career there. As the main cast, we have Rod Taylor as Pongo. And Rod Taylor was mostly known as for being in the movie The Time Machine, and also in the Alfred Hitchcock classic The Birds at roughly this same time. He was an Australian actor. There is the voice of Pongo.
And that's just his voice. He's not even doing any kind of impression.
Yeah, there's not a character voice really on that one. He's just doing that. The woman who did Perdita, this was probably her best known role. Not really a lot there. We have Ben Wright in here as Roger, and we've talked about Ben Wright before on our show, because his final role was another Disney movie. He was Grimsby in The Little Mermaid. So there we go, a bit of Disney continuity there. We have Lisa Davis as Anita. She was kind of mostly known for being on comedy shows in the 50s and 60s. George Burns Show, Jack Benny's Show, Beverly Hillbillies. So a lot of TV credits, but not a lot of big starring roles. This was probably one of her biggest. Betty Lou Gerson. She is the biggie. She is Cruella. Betty Lou Gerson is also a Disney legend, in as far as has been named a Disney legend. She started her Disney career in Cinderella. She was the narrator of the movie Cinderella. And then this was 11 years later. and she did Cruella. She also had a kind of walk-on role in Mary Poppins as an old crone. And in between that, she did a few things. The original movie, The Fly, not the Jeff Goldblum movie, but, you know, the one it was based on. And,
help me, help me!
Yeah, and did a lot of TV guest starring in the 50s and 60s and such. So, anyway, that kind of runs out the main cast. The only one I do want to mention, just because he is also a voice acting legend. At one point, the Dalmatians are watching the Thunderbolt Adventure Hour, which is sort of a Lassie in the Wild West kind of show. And the villain in that show is being voiced by Paul Frees, who you may know best as Boris Badenoff from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Permit me for introducing myself.
Yeah. But he actually did have quite a long career with Disney. He was Professor Ludwig von Drake during the Disney anthology TV series, you know, Adventure in Color and Wonderful World of Color and things like that. He narrated Donald Duck in Math Magic Land. He narrated a defunct now Tomorrowland attraction called Adventure Through Inner Space. He was the original narrator of Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. He is also he's also a voice for various animatronic characters throughout the parks, including the ghost host at the Haunted Mansion. But he's also the auctioneer in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, and he is also the voice of the Dead Men Tell No Tales. So, again, another just amazing Disney voice, also honored as a Disney legend, posthumously. But yeah, he is in here just kind of as in that one scene as that one voice, but it adds so much to the movie.
Yeah, you mentioned watching television. For a Disney movie, this is a rarity because it took place roughly in the year it was made. Now, we talked about that with Oliver and Company, but at that point, it's kind of already been a regular thing. This was relatively new. I think the only other movie that took place in any kind of modern setting would have been Lady and the Tramp.
I thought Lady and the Tramp had originally been set, further back.
You know, modern-ish day, I mean, 20th century.
Yeah, so I really liked that it was, a departure for Disney. Mm-hmm. That... you know, they had become so ingrained with
the fairy tales.
Fairy tales, a kind of medieval aesthetic, especially for their animation. Mm-hmm. They got a little bit, you know, they branched out a little bit for their live action stuff. They did some futuristic stuff in that one. But even a lot of that stuff was, you know, we've got pirate films, we've got Western films that are set farther back and stuff. Not a lot of Disney was set in the modern time to Disney, and especially not the animated. Mm-hmm. So, I liked it.
Another departure, even though... one of the main characters is the songwriter. This movie is not a musical.
Yeah, I had forgotten how low on songs this was. There are only two songs in this movie.
Yeah.
There's of course the big villain number, Cruella de Vil. And then it ends with Dalmatian Plantation.
Yeah, yeah, we talked about that.
Good rhyme, but kind of a mildly cringy.
Dalmatian Farm doesn't really roll off the tongue and make a good
song.
Well,
like I said, it's a good rhyme. It's good scansion for a song, but okay.
I mean, unless you want to count the Canine Crunchies jingle.
Yeah, there is the Canine Crunchies jingle that I guess could have as a third song.
Was a fourth song written for this movie. There was. It never got used. Called Playful Melody. And you kind of hear it in the beginning of the movie. And it kind of is the sort of theme song of Pongo in the movie. It goes dun 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 dun. Yeah, that actually has lyrics.
All of the bells in the town are ringing. Say, can't you hear all the people sing? Cause of the way the band can play that playful melody.
And it was in the movie, but they took the lyrics out and just left the melody in there, and it kind of works better that way.
Okay. Let's get into the plot. I really want to get into the plot because... There were a couple of things in the plot of this movie that when I got to the end of the movie, I went, oh, that's been left wide open and doesn't come off so well if you think about it for 20 seconds.
So let's get into the plot of this one. We have Roger Radcliffe, a bachelor songwriter living with his dog Pongo. And Pongo's kind of gotten tired of the single life. He wants his pet, as he's called him, to settle down, you know, because he feels that his pet is lonely, but in reality, it's like him, you know, like he's lonely. He's tired of being a bachelor. He wants a mate. And just out of the blue one day, he starts looking out the door, out of the window, and seeing all these other women with their dogs. And of course, the joke being pet owners look like their pets, pets start looking like their owners. And it's a nice visual joke, and it's a trope at this point. Probably was a trope already then.
Yeah, probably a little bit, but I like the scene of Pongo looking out the window because it's one of those things of he's checking out the dogs first.
Yeah.
And then hoping that the woman attached is going to be
attractive as well.
A suitable mate for his pet.
Well, you think about it from his perspective. He wants a mate of his own, yes. So he's looking for the best possible mate for himself. But he also wants the girl for Roger. So he can, and if he looks at the girl first, then yeah, okay, she's attractive enough for my pet. But the dog isn't. So he's trying to find that balance. The good-looking dog and the good-looking girl. For himself and his pet, you know. Matchmaker Pongo.
Yeah, I guess if you really wanted to, you could take issue with this scene if you really wanted to be nitpicky, but I kind of like it. I think the jokes are funny without being too sexist, and I think that works mostly because he's talking about dogs.
Yeah,
I think if it was just straight up talking about the human women, it wouldn't work so well. The I think the one kind of cringy joke is when he goes like, "Oh no, too young," and it's a puppy being walked by like a tiny child.
Well, from the perspective of a dog, not really. He even admits he doesn't really know humans so well, so he doesn't really know that much about humans.
And that's why it works, because he's, you know, he's talking about, you know, pugs and poodles and stuff like that, as opposed to human women. So it's one of those where you can kind of get away with it.
Yeah, and then he finally sees Perdita and Anita, and he's completely infatuated with Perdita, and he just wants to meet her. And luckily for him, you know, Anita is a very attractive looking young woman.
Yeah, really, really lucked out on that one. And they're going to the park, so he very sneakily moves the clock forward so that Roger will stop working and take him for a walk. And then they have the most adorable meet cute.
See, this is how we get you a partner. We have your dog have to hook you up.
Yeah, I actually kind of got mad at my dog during the rewatch. I kind of looked at him and I'm like, you have yet to find me a single date. What are you doing over there? Why am I feeding you all these canine crunchies? You are not working for them. But I think this is one of the most adorable, you know, like I said, I think it's one of the most adorable meet cutes in all of Disney history. It's just the cutest thing.
Yeah, he starts horsing around and he steals Roger's hat. He gets the leash tangled around the two of them and they fall into the little lake. You know, she's drenched. She's trying to get her handkerchief to dry herself and he pulls out his handkerchief and it's soaked and it worked. Pongo, it worked.
Yeah, all it takes is just one laugh and they are moved in together, happily coupled.
Yeah, they get married in a church apparently, but no one else there. Because you're looking at, granted, it's probably because to save on animation, but there's some subtext there.
It does
there.
Have like a kind of sad wedding. Yeah, it's like
the only witnesses there are the dogs.
I just imagine their marriage license with like at the witness signature thing. It's just a dog ball.
Get the paw print right there.
Yeah, those two little paw prints.
It kind of makes sense with the later scene with Cruella kind of laughing at the fact that Anita married a songwriter. So it could be like all of her classmates kind of disowned her because she went with this wannabe songwriter instead of, a socialite or something.
Yeah, well, she is, she's very bookish. Mm-hmm. Because that's the first thing we see is her sitting, reading some sort of novel, in the park. And she's also said to be very, simple in her desires. She wants a simple life. She doesn't care much about, you know, money or the finer things or, and that's really why, Cruella looks down on her. There is some suggestion that Cruella comes from some sort of aristocratic family.
They do. She does own a house in the countryside. We see that later in the movie.
And there is a portrait of somebody that they refer to as his lordship or something that they're throwing darts at one point.
Lord Deville.
Yeah. So it does seem like she has some kind of some kind of aristocratic background that has given her some money and some status. She, unlike in the live action version, Cruella isn't really said to have like a job, so she does seem like, you know, maybe some sort of inheritance. Mm-hmm. Deal there, especially. But the thing is that her family home is in horrific disrepair. Why if she is so focused on wealth and her status and her look, you know, as seen through her coats and her fashion and stuff. Why has she let her family mansion, her country house, just fall down so much where it's got holes in the wall?
Maybe she's spending all her money on furs and just not really keeping up the house.
Yeah, maybe. This was about the point in time when a lot of those English country houses started to fall into disrepair because the former aristocracy did not have the generational wealth that it took to keep them up, and they started selling them to the nouveau riche and
She probably moved to the city and just didn't really care about the old country house.
Yeah, I live in London now. Who cares?
Yeah, this one is in London. This is, you know, full on and with a mostly British cast, you know, even yes, and just some New Zealand actors, but you know. And Americans doing Americans doing bad British accents because Disney.
Yeah. So
I mean, take a look at Mary Poppins.
Yeah. I want to talk about the entrance of Cruella. Cause we have this beautiful opening of this film of like, my human is unhappy. I am unhappy with the bachelor life. Let's get, you know, that could have been a whole movie.
Yeah. I mean, matchmaker movies, a thing. There's, you know, the ending of the marriage.
Yeah. Just a romantic comedy with a dog as the catalyst there for them to getting together. But that's like the first, what, the 10, 15
minutes
the first
of the movie. 10 minutes of the, oh, after the 3-minute opening credits. Remember when credits used to be at the beginning of the movie?
Yes, and in some ways I like that better. Because you don't get people looking at you weird and trying to tell you, there's no after credit sequence. No, I'm watching the credits. It's the least I can do. These people made me a movie.
Part of me kind of wishes that they would come back and put all the credits at the beginning of the movie, but then you have people walking in 10 minutes later trying to skip the credits.
Ugh. They do that anyway. Like, the movie's already started and they're still walking in. Like, ugh. Oh, well. Anyway.
back to the movie.
But back to the movie. In any other movie, that first 10 minutes would have been its own movie, and then all of a sudden, the dogs are just having a lovely lie about. Pongo finds out he's going to be a father.
Yeah, we fast forward 6 months into their marriage. Pongo not wasting time.
Honestly, as quickly as dogs gestate, I'm surprised they did not already have a litter before this.
True.
But anyway, Perdita, it tells him that they're you know, going to have puppies. And they are just kind of staring out the window when a car zips around the corner and Perdita goes, oh no, that horrible woman.
And the car
Disney
horn.
Becomes an entirely different movie.
And apparently, you know, Roger gets the inspiration just by saying her name, Cruella De Vil.
Well, Roger, I think, is smarter than Anita because it does seem like Anita grew up with Cruella. And so it's probably one of those things of like, no, she's not evil. She's just always been like that. But Roger meeting her as an adult is like, sweetheart, her name is Cruella De Vil.
Her name literally is Cruel Devil.
Yeah.
The writer of this book is not being subtle.
Yeah. And she comes into the door with a pretty famous Disney stock sound effect, which is like I think it's called Castle Thunder or something like that. It's like a really famous, like, evil sound effect in the Disney stockpile, and just comes in a cloud of green cigarette smoke.
A lot of smoking in this movie.
A lot of smoking in this movie. Roger smokes like a chimney with his pipe. Cruella constantly has a cigarette with her.
No tobacco warning though for this movie on Disney Plus.
Yeah, that was weird. There was one, however, I did watch a few minutes of the live action Glenn Close from the 90s after, and there is a tobacco warning on that one. But I love the use of the green smoke because there's the joke that evil stands for every villain is lime. because of Disney's overuse of that color of green to signify its villains. All of Maleficent's magic in Sleeping Beauty is that color green. Mm-hmm. And there's many other famous Disney references, but there's that particular color of green that always marks a Disney villain. And Cruella, I love how they worked that in with the it's not just cigarette smoke, it's somehow evil cigarette smoke.
Yeah, everyone else has the regular smoke. Hers is green because she's evil.
And somehow even worse smelling.
Yeah.
Than cigarette, because Anita immediately starts coughing horribly at it, and I'm like, she lives with Roger, and Roger smokes all the time.
Even it even bothers Pongo. Again, Pongo's likely been with Roger his entire life.
Yeah. But yeah, like you said, before Cruella walks in the door, Anita's like, "Oh, my darling friend Cruella De Vil is here." And Roger starts writing lyrics to a song he's been working on.
Music first and then the lyrics, which sounds like a lot of our musician friends.
Well, it depends.
Our friend Kyle Carroza, our friend Kyle, is notorious of doing music first and then lyrics. He'll like hum a melody into his phone and make a song out of it. And then sit on it for like 2 years.
That is absolutely the way that some songwriters work. I have always been a words first, tune later kind of person. Mm. And so it's the only time I do tune first generally is when I do parodies. Mm. Then of course the tune is already written. But I know a lot of people, and Kyla's one of them, like you said, but I know a lot of people who do swear by that music first. You know, they're always humming some song and then eventually they just figure out lyrics to it. But I've never been able to do that. So I like that Roger hates Cruella being in his house so much that he starts to loudly play this song.
Yeah, he starts
every instrument in the house.
He's stomping his feet as he's playing. He's playing the song as just to get her out of the house, just like to drown out her voice. He hates her voice so much that the louder Cruella gets, the louder he plays.
I want to talk about Cruella's voice because I had kind of forgotten in the original. I had been so used to the kind of Glenn Close, you know, it had been a while since I'd watched the original, but so much. So much of Cruella, including her voice, in a lot of ways, is taken from Tallulah Bankhead, who was a huge Hollywood star in the 40s and 50s, and would have been a big time. But the way that Cruella moves, part of her speech patterns and stuff, because she had a kind of affected southern accent that was sort of mixed with that kind of fake Atlantic accent that was sort of like half American, half British and stuff like that. So Cruella's voice falls in that same kind of register, and it turns out that they did model a lot of her on Tallulah in her look and everything. But Betty Lou Gerson said that she wasn't intentionally imitating Tallulah Bankhead, but when she listened back to the recording, she was like, "Oh, yeah." both of them were raised in the South in a similar kind of time, so I think it kind of came from that kind of exaggerating that kind of old Southern accent. I don't really know why Cruella de Vil, who appears to be from English aristocracy, would have such a pronounced early 20th century Southern accent, but okay.
It just works for the movie. Probably gets more, I don't know. And I just do love how as soon as Cruella leaves, like, Roger is all like making fun of the way she walks and the way he's holding his cigarette and has that sweater wrapped around his neck.
Yeah.
While he's singing the song that he just wrote.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, you know, everybody knows the Cruella de Vil song. That is next to "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." That's gotta be one of the most nasty villain songs. It's just like, nasty this person is.
One of the few villain songs from Disney not sung by the villain.
Yeah, sung by Roger in the movie, and then later re-recorded by several big voices for various Disney
projects. It says a lot that you hate someone so much that you're going to write a song dissing them, literally, and it becomes your big hit.
Yeah, this is a very interesting early diss track.
Yeah.
Roger would have done well in rap battles, I think. But here's... okay. We're talking about the song now, so I gotta do it. But, you know, spoilers and everything for the rest of the movie. Okay. Like I said, it had been a while since I had seen this version and not the 90s version. In this version, we never see any of the humans find out what Cruella's scheme was. From the human's perspective, the dogs are stolen by just two random men, the puppies. The Pongo and Perdita run away in the aftermath, and then return somehow with not only their 15 puppies, but a total of 99 puppies from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the dogs know, but we know that while dogs understand humans, humans do not understand dogs. In this, you know, all the animals can communicate with each other. They can understand human language. It does not work that way for the humans.
Yeah.
So all they know is that their dogs went missing for a time and then showed back up with more dogs from somewhere. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, while their dogs are gone, Roger writes a song defaming an innocent woman, as far as they know. A woman who has, the only thing she's ever done is tried to buy a litter of puppies from them. For no nefarious purpose, as far as they know, she just seems to want puppies. They don't know about the coat.
Yeah.
They don't know about the plan, okay? So, the only thing this woman did, from the human's perspective, was Roger doesn't like his wife's friend, so he writes a famous song dissing her and makes a lot of money off of it.
Yeah.
Like, in any other situation, the next scene of this movie would be like, you know, Lady Cruella de Vil of the de Vil family has sued
Roger Radcliffe.
Roger Radcliffe for defamation of character.
Simpsons does rip off this movie quite a bit. They did it with the dogs, but they actually do it with Homer writing a diss track about Flanders. That's what I was remembering when I watched this movie for this podcast. It's like, yeah, I know that Simpsons blatantly parodied the 101 Dalmatians movie and its plot, But it also had an episode where Homer wrote a song just saying how much he hates Flanders, similar to how Roger writes a song about how much he hates Cruella.
Also, this is fascinating how fast this song goes viral, because these puppies are not missing for that long.
Well, he technically writes the song, let me see, end of September, they say, because they say the puppies were born in October. So around September-ish, he writes this song. October, the puppies are born. November-ish, early December, the puppies are kidnapped. And then the song becomes a big hit around Christmas time.
Yeah, which is like such a Christmas song.
Yes.
Cruella
de Vil is a Christmas song confirmed.
I guess. But seriously, though, this was the 50s. It wasn't like he could just record it in his bedroom and put it up on the internet and, you know, somebody found it and retweeted it or whatever. Like, he had to...
YouTube did not exist in 1961.
Yeah, he had to go to some sort of music production firm, you know, some sort of recording company. He had to sell them this song. Who wants to buy this song? When you're asked, like, well, what gave you the inspiration for this song? Well, my wife went to school with a woman who's probably, like, some lower aristocracy. She's loaded, and I'm just going to smack talk her for 3 minutes.
My wife's best friend is a female dog.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing, Roger? Like, who let this go beyond an annoying thing Roger sinks in his living room to tell his wife that he doesn't like her friends?
At least in terms of this, it's probably real life this stuff happens, but they at least changed the name, like the famous song Peggy Sue. That wasn't the girl's name; it was a different name entirely. Buddy Holly just changed it to Peggy Sue so he wouldn't get in trouble.
Well, yeah, but also, even if you do use the name, you just use, like, you know, Peggy Sue isn't called, like, you know, Peggy Sue Amsterdam, who lives at 432 Main Street in this town. You know, I mean, it's like, Cruella de Vil is a pretty singular name.
Hey there, Delilah, this ain't.
Yeah, and honestly, we only really know who Delilah is because that song came out in, like, Google times, and there was, like, you know, posts or something where he had talked about wanting to go to a party and talk to Delilah or something, and people figured it out, I think.
Yeah.
And she was not happy, and that's a song about how awesome she is.
Yeah, that's the thing. He wrote the song about a girl he liked. This is the guy writing a song about a girl he hates.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for the fact that, like, you know, and honestly, we don't know that Cruella. I read I think on the Disney wiki, I think it is the. One of their things says that presumably Cruella is arrested after her final scene in the movie, but we never see that. And honestly, like, the car she's chasing just keeps driving on. So, like, does the guy driving the junk van get to London and go, like, oh, by the way, some crazy woman tried to run me off the road? Or does he just leave it be?
He has to say someone. Like, I mean, probably, I mean, London, so maybe Scotland Yard? I don't know.
But the thing is that none of the humans know that this had anything to do with the missing puppies. So even though Scotland Yard is looking into the missing puppies...
It's quite possible that Horace and Jasper just squealed.
Maybe? But, like, also, nobody's coming for them either? at the end of the movie? Like,
well, I would assume they would let themselves get captured only to appear on What's My Crime.
They might. But again,
because that's a point, that's a plot point in this movie, is television. The puppies watch Thunderbolts. The Horace and Jasper watch a game show called What's My Crime, where criminals have a panel guess what their crime was, what they were arrested for. And yeah, if like, the panel can't, yeah, the panel can't figure it out, he gets a vacate, the criminal gets a vacation when they finish their sentence.
Yeah,
that sounds like something you would have today in reality television.
I was sitting there thinking, like, I might watch this show, and in America, it would be called Florida Man.
Yeah.
It would, because it'd just be like, what weird crime did Florida Man commit? Guess it and win a prize.
Florida right now. Moving on.
Florida all the time. Come on.
Yeah.
But I can sort of see how you might imagine, but it's not in the movie.
You know?
I mean, my degrees are in literature, and we're always told to stick to the text. It's not in the movie.
And again, we are not talking about sequels made 30 years after the fact.
Yeah, no. In this one film, that's it. Cruella crashes her car at the end. The puppies get away and get back home, and that's it. The humans are none the wiser for any of this plot. So the movie ends with some puppies went missing for a while, and they came back with way more puppies, and we're just gonna deal with it.
And according to Roger, it's like all theirs, because it's like, he says, Pongo, you found the puppies and you made more.
Yeah, Roger apparently thinks that Pongo and Perdita had like 80 something more puppies in the span of however long. You know, I looked it up because the geography of England is not my strong suit, but I did Google map it, and they're in London, and they're told when they start their, when Pongo and Perdita run away to find the thing, that the DeVille hellhole is in Suffolk.
I love that. That's essentially the name of the building is Hell Hall.
Yeah. We don't know if that's for real the name, or if that's the name the locals gave it because it's in such disrepair.
Oh, it's also owned by someone named DeVille.
Yeah. But that is about modernly. Right now, that's about a 95-mile drive. Mm-hmm. Which in a car, you know, on motorways and stuff, takes about 2 hours. Mm-hmm. But for two dogs in the middle of winter in snow, we don't know how long they were gone.
They could have been gone a few weeks,
Yeah, maybe. It seems that the puppies, like you said, are kidnapped at the beginning of November, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's long enough for the story to get in the paper that the 15 puppies were stolen. Mm-hmm. We know it's been long enough that Scotland Yard has questioned and cleared Cruella de Vil of any wrongdoing. Mm-hmm. Because that is mentioned in passing. But it does seem like they had the other 80-something puppies just kind of already there.
Yeah, even the puppies themselves, the yeah. they were all bought from various pet stores and whatever at some point around the time of the kidnapping.
Yeah. So
let's talk about the plan. Dog skin fur coats. Dog skin fur coats. That's some effed up S, and I'm trying to keep this podcast PG.
Well, this is one of those things that I'm going to say. By the 1950s, early 60s, yes, most people in a European or, you know, in America, Canada, you know, would not think of wearing a dog skin fur. But you go back a bit, and we used to use, we know that, sorry, my historical reenactor side is coming out, but we know that Norse during the Viking era used to keep domesticated cats for fur coats as well. As much as I am loath to say it, there is, of course, the ermine, which is a ferret cousin, another mustelid, that is famously used for fur. Which would have also been a domesticated animal at the time, and some people kept them as pets. Fun fact, ferrets have been domesticated and kept as pets for at least 2,000 years. And ermines and similar. Wolf skins, not necessarily the skin of domestic dogs, but wolf skins were also big in making cloaks and coats and trims and stuff back in the day. So while it is weird at this point in history, and while we do think of it as cruel because humans have a very specific attachment to dogs as a species now, at other points in history, this would have probably been like maybe odd, but not like you're an immediate outcast, take her to jail, you know? Well,
obviously there are buyers, because she's going to make these multiple coats, not just one for herself, but multiple coats for multiple buyers. So obviously there is a demand for Dalmatian skin coats. And that's why she gets all these, you know, 99 puppies to grow them to full size and then make, you know, at least, what, 30, 35 coats, maybe?
I don't know.
Because we know that with Horace and Jasper say, with them as puppies, you'll be lucky to get a dozen out of them.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. They did kind of clear up a few of these weird oversights in the live-action version. Not a perfect movie, but they did, you know, like the humans find out Cruella's plan and she gets arrested. So Roger's making her a laughing stock in his video game in that version makes sense because she is like infamously in the newspaper as being the woman that tried to murder a bunch of dogs. But they also make a point of saying that the reason she's using puppies is because when the Dalmatians get older, their fur will be coarser and it won't make as nice a coat. But there's no particular reason she's using puppies in the movie.
Well, she wants to use puppies because, you know, she's already been questioned by the police. So she wants to get it done as quickly as possible to essentially hide the evidence.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure how, you know, turning them into coats really hides the evidence if you're going to be wearing it downtown.
She's not exactly, you know, being
rational here. She doesn't seem to be the smartest here.
Yeah, she said, you know, she's already been questioned by the police, so she wants to get it done as quickly as possible, sell the coats to the whoever's buying them from her. And she never says she's going to wear it herself. She says that she's going to sell them. So obviously other people will have these Dalmatian skin coats.
But she is very attached to fur coats. I mean, she has a long speech about how much she loves furs and getting new furs and wearing furs. So presumably she's going to keep one for herself.
Yeah.
Because it seems weird you would go to all this trouble and not keep one if you are a fur coat aficionado.
Yep.
The pacing of this movie was another thing for me.
This feels like the older movies where it's very episodic. And because, you know, Disney was very known for doing shorts. So like the older movies would be like 10, 15 minutes of a plot and then another 10, 15 minutes of another plot because that's all they knew how to do was shorts. And they've been in business for a while at this point, about, you know, 20 years at least. And this does feel like the throwback to the episodic way they were doing those older movies.
Well, the movie has, you know, that kind of opening act of how this family gets together and the puppies being born and that they're a happy family so that you feel empathy when the dogs are stolen. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a bit long, but it does move kind of quickly and you're feeling it, you know. It's a good opening. And then we get the theft of the puppies from the house. And then it goes into the Twilight Bark section,
which features a few cameos.
We mentioned
dog cameos. Peg from Lady and the Tramp is in the pet store, and after the limo with the fancy dogs in it, you actually see Lady and Tramp participating in the Twilight Bark.
Is Peg the little Scotty dog?
Peg is the little gray fur one. She's the one that sings He's a Tramp.
Then the little Scotty dog is in there too.
Hmm.
Yeah, the little black Scotty dog is in there shortly before Lady and the Tramp show up. You actually see that dog in a house joining the bark.
So yeah, in the pet shop, you actually see Peg in the bed with a litter of puppies. Apparently, I'm going through the scene. Yep, there's the bulldog that does the boom, 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 ruff from that song. He's in there, too. So yeah, this is just Disney recycling the models. And that's, again, another thing that this era did was recycle a lot of models and animation cycles from previous movies just to save money. You can see there are YouTube videos of the recycled animations that they've done over the years. We don't need to go into that here. But yeah, and of course you get all of the dogs that were earlier in the movie participating in the Twilight Bark.
Yeah, all the ones that Pongo was scoping out as potential mates. But this sequence goes on so long.
Padding. Because if you take out, like, the extended scene of the birth of the puppies and the extended scene of the Twilight Bark, this would probably be maybe just over an hour.
Yeah, this is a very padded movie. And yet, like we've just been discussing, there's a lot of scenes they, like, left out. There's whole plot threads that they left out. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, like I said, they kind of fixed that in some of the later adaptations. But that the Twilight Bark, which is, you know, the dog messaging system,
it explains why dogs are always yelling at night.
Which is fine, but that's like a minute and a half tops in a well-paced movie. This goes on for like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it was driving my real life dog crazy. He could not figure out what all this barking was and what all. I mean, he was just kind of lying on the floor, like looking around, cocking his head from side to side, and his ears were twitching, and he did not know what to do with this scene. But it just goes on forever as we see hundreds of dogs just howl and goodness. And then we get out to the country, and then that's like a whole, there's like a whole mini movie.
Yeah, that's a short in itself.
Yeah, it's just a Disney short of, well, here's Colonel and Captain and Sergeant and their friends and the goose and the...
I'm surprised that Disney never actually made a short about these characters. I mean, Figaro got his own short, and he was in, you know, Pinocchio one time. Figaro became Minnie's cat for a while. But it's like, a cartoon about Tibbs and the Colonel would be awesome.
Yeah, and I like the characters, but as far as the pacing of the film, this whole sequence just grinds it to a halt. Between the barking and the now we're in the country with a bunch of characters we've just met. And it's also, while it is funny, it's not well-paced jokes.
And it's the extended old man joke who can't hear anything.
Yeah, they do that the dog can't hear joke like four times back to back with nothing else to break it up. It is so long.
Between that and Rolly's, I'm hungry, mother. I'm hungry.
Yeah, that is an overused joke. Quotation marks around it, question mark. This really slows, like, it just grinds to a halt for me until we get inside Hell Hole with the thieves and all of the puppies and the cat.
Mm-hmm.
Then it picks back up. Mm-hmm. And we get our pacing back as they try to escape, and you see the what's my crime, and you get a lot of jokes with the thieves and stuff. That's fine. I like that.
You kind of get an actual old Disney cartoon on the TV.
Yeah, they did with the flower dance.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, once it gets back to inside Hell Hole and you see, like, oh goodness, there's actually 99 puppies instead of just the 15 we're looking for, and how are we going to save them all? You find out finally about the plot to make a fur coat, which for over half of the movie is not revealed to you. It's just, why does Cruella want puppies?
Mm-hmm.
And Anita even says, I don't know why she wants a litter of puppies. She doesn't seem like the type that would love a puppy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why they refuse to sell the puppies at first, because they don't think that they'll be going to a happy home.
Yeah, and Roger actually stands up to Cruella. He's scared out of his mind at her, but he stands up to her and says, we're not selling you the puppies. Not one.
Yeah, so... it's a good instinct, but they don't really have any reason to believe that she's up to anything horrific, like I said. And then we as the audience don't even find out that that's what she wants to do with them until she shows up at Hell Hall, like, an hour into the movie.
Yeah.
And goes like, I want to turn these all into fur coats, kill them, and then leaves. And you're like, well, that was a twist. So I don't know. This is a very oddly paced movie for me. But it picks back up in Hell Hole.
Like the last half hour of the movie really picks up.
Yeah, it picks back up again. The first part of the movie, like the first third, is really good and well paced. The last third is really good and well paced. That middle third is kinda.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but again, they needed to pad this out to make it over an hour and 15 minutes.
They didn't need to pad it out. They just forgot to wrap up some of the storylines.
Yeah.
They could have easily, you know, put the humans figuring out, you know, the humans having something to do with Cruella's, discovering Cruella's plot, Cruella having some form of punishment for it. I'm not saying she necessarily had to die. Like some Disney villains, but
you could have been arrested, you know.
Yeah, arrested or turned out from society or something. You know, I don't know.
I mean, they could have done something like she's part of this upper crust society of fur lovers, and they're trying to decide what animal. And she said, "Well, my friend has Dalmatians. Dalmatian furs. Hey, we don't have Dalmatian furs, but we'll buy." You know, 24 Dalmatian furs if you can get it done, and that'd be her plot. But, you know, they don't do that.
They sort of did something similar in the live action where there's, like, you know, somebody kills and skins a tiger in a zoo, and, you know, I mean, there's a whole thing there that they kind of use in that later movie. But, yeah, it's kind of people trying to figure out her motivation after the fact, and
again, that's fanon, that's, you know, headcanon. It's not the text of the movie.
Yeah. So anyway, once we get to the back third of the movie, it picks up again, and it becomes a nice little kind of action chase thing.
I love the animation. I love the animation of Pongo and Purdy busting through the window.
That's a really good sequence, yeah.
Give me back my kids!
Yeah, and the two of them just, like, going bonkers trying to bite the thieves and fight for their puppies. And then, of course, them trying to herd all of these puppies, basically.
Yeah.
Back and, again, 95 miles back home.
Pongo and Purdy could have left them, like, you know, we'll get our kids, and, you know, because they're our kids, but now, like, we can't leave the rest of these kids here.
Yeah, once they find out what the plan is, they're absolutely not going to leave these puppies. And I like that all the animals are helping.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just dogs. But, yep. You know, they end up in a barn with cows, and the cows feed the puppies milk. You know, they let them nurse.
And, you have the horse and the cat.
The horse and the cat helping out. The goose that's trying to make sure the messages get passed along.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that it's like a community effort. Which is cool. I do like
there's
that.
There's an entire underground circle of dogs that just help people.
Yeah, it's a weird dog underground that is trying to get them back to safety. And eventually a dog is like, hey, we've got you a ride back to the rest of London. They're like, oh, good. We are sick of walking through the snow with 99 puppies.
Yeah.
Imagine taking one child anywhere and then multiply that by 99 children and two adults.
Yeah.
I've been on school trips that had roughly that ratio of children to adults, and not fun whether you are a child or an adult.
Yeah.
But, you know, they finally get, but they're blocked by Cruella and the thieves.
Yeah.
And they have a kind of interesting thing that, once again, because they're dogs, they get away with it, and it's not quite as problematic as it would be if a human was doing it.
They roll around in the soot and disguise themselves as black dogs, as Labradors.
Yeah, black labs.
And they can get away with it because they're dogs. It's just, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a unique idea, you know. And the kids are playing in the soot, and Pongo says, "Hey, they're looking for Dalmatians. They're not looking for Labradors."
Yeah, and I love how dumb the I like that they kind of lampshade the ridiculousness of this plot by having the thieves go like, look, there's a whole bunch of Labrador dogs. That seems a suspicious number of Labrador dogs. Are those the dogs we're looking for? They're like, oh yeah, what did they do? Disguise themselves as Labradors? We're looking for Dalmatians, idiot. That's not them. Dogs aren't that smart.
And then Cruella figures it out. Well, it's a happenstance. One of the icicles starts to melt and the water gets on one of the puppies and reveals that it's a Dalmatian.
But I like that Cruella is absolutely, like, flabbergasted by it, because she's like, I can't believe that these dogs were smart enough to, like, disguise themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, then we get the kind of final car chase as all the dogs get into...
And I love this, because especially the way it was animated, the story of how this scene was animated, and how... They literally made a model of Cruella's car, had it go, you know, kind of recorded themselves by hand, moving this car how they wanted it to go, and they drew over the recording of that, playing with that model car, and that's how they got Cruella's car to move the way it does in the movie.
Yeah, and it's a really well animated and it's got some really great frames,
mm-hmm.
you know, Cruella's evil faces that yeah, they
her,
draw.
Her eyes just change into yeah. psychotic.
I really do like it. This is an excellent sequence, and I love the guy in the van, the guy driving the van, because he has no idea what is going on.
All he knows is there's this crazy woman hitting it, trying to run him off the road. He doesn't know why.
Yeah, he has no idea that the dogs are in the back of the car. She's not yelling anything at him. She's honking some, but that's, you know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So I love this whole scene because I love the idea that there's just this, like, poor little... guy in a junker van trying to finish his run to London so that he could get back home for Christmas and be with his family or whatever. And here comes this, like, crazy rich woman trying to run him off the road in her, like, really fancy car.
That she completely wrecks by the end of this movie.
Yeah. That, like, poor car. That's a nice car, too. I want that car. It's a good-looking car. But yeah, the animation kind of gets a little bit better in the final sequence, in the final car chase.
Yeah, they put a lot of effort into making this car chase look good.
Yeah, and, yeah, it's an interesting ending, you know, and a very action-packed ending. But again, it just kind of stops with, like, well, Cruella runs off the road and I guess gives up? Question mark? Like, she just goes back home and lives the rest of her... I don't know.
Again, we are not counting sequels made after the fact here. We're just counting the movie itself.
Yeah, and for a while, this was the only... film. I mean, it took a while for those sequels to be made. It wasn't really until, like, the 90s that we really kind of resurrected this film.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good 30 years.
And that was only
years.
Because of the popularity of the live-action movie.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like I said, there's, like, a good 30 years where this was just the film. The villain gets away with it, sort of? Question mark?
Yeah, there's no punishment that we know of in this film. She gets run off the road, she calls the two idiots, and that's it.
Yeah, and the puppies make it back to Roger and Anita.
On Christmas Eve! It's a Christmas miracle!
And they're just like, oh, you brought us, like, 80 other puppies. Okay, I guess we just own them now. We might as well buy a big house, because apparently in the time you were gone, defamed a poor woman and made a lot of money off of it. So, yeah, it's a little, and then they sing that they're going to run a Dalmatian plantation.
Yeah. Again, Dalmatian farm doesn't exactly roll off the tongue of the song. Puppy farm, maybe?
Puppy ranch?
Puppy ranch?
How many head of puppy do you have?
I mean, the sequels, the TV shows and everything show that they actually just bought a farm and now all the puppies live on this farm. And they apparently live off the residuals of the Cruella de Vil song.
Yeah, I honestly think that Cruella de Vil only became the kind of Disney icon that she did for two reasons. One, the design is amazing. I mean, instantly recognizable. That thin frame and that giant coat and the crazy two-toned hair. Mm. I mean, it's a really fascinating character design. But then also that song.
Yep.
Which in the film is completely unearned in the context of the film. Mm-hmm. But it is one of the catchiest songs ever written and one of the greatest villain themes Disney ever turned out. So
I love that. Some of the lines in that one is just amazingly written and just cruel. Like, this vampire bat, this inhuman beast, ought to be locked up and never released.
Like, I mean, yeah, but apparently she never is. Movie. I really have been shocked by how angry I have been that is just a dangling plot thread.
We could always watch the sequel, 101 Dalmatians 2 Patch's London Adventure.
Oh, do we have to?
No, we don't have to.
Okay. Well, at least not right now.
Not right now. Eventually, when we run out of the good Disney movies, we'll have to watch the sequels.
Please, good Disney movies, please keep coming.
I don't know, we got a whole backlog of Marvel movies. Yeah, when you wish upon a star, the good movies will come. And yeah, 101 Dalmatians. It's honestly, for the most part, it's still a good movie. I mean, it got a lot of critical acclaim when it came out, saved the studio. Yeah, the middle third of this movie, act two of this movie, drags a lot. But I actually had fun rewatching this movie again.
So you're saying that there is definitely the Disney magic.
I'm going to say yes. The visuals, again, because of the way they were animating the movie in a cheaper way, hasn't held it up. And like you said, on high definition TVs, it doesn't really look. And whatever cleanup they tried to make has smudged some of the animation frames. But there's still some magic in this movie.
I am going to agree. Unless your child is like overly sensitive about the idea of theoretical violence towards puppies, which I totally understand if they are. But I would say, you know, put this one on your family watch list while you're trying to figure out stuff to keep you doing, you know, keep you going this year. I enjoyed the rewatch. Like I said, it had been a very long time since I had seen this version. It is by far not a perfect movie, of course. Mm-mm.
A lot of the older movies aren't. There's some problematic parts in this movie.
Well, not even problematic. It's just I think it's kind of lazy filmmaking at some points. I think the pacing is kind of off. I think some of the jokes don't work. Not necessarily on an offense level, but I just I don't think they're timed right. I don't think they're delivered with the correct punch. The score is a bit boring and non-existent in places.
Again, this was Disney's first attempt to not make a musical. And this movie was also their attempt to make a movie on the cheap.
Yeah. Sadly, some of that cheapness does come through. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
But it's charming. And Pongo and Birdie are so adorable.
You know who loved this movie? Mel Brooks named his dog Pongo.
Aww.
And actually referenced that in Spaceballs. Pongo's review of Rocky 5000.
Yeah, that is true. I had never made that connection before. I really do. I like the TV watching sequences.
Yeah, again, this is the first movie set in the era it came out, and television was a big thing. It was kind of like, it was still considered the new thing.
Yeah, I love the scene of the puppies watching the kind of Lassie stand-in, Thunderbolt.
Lucky's obsession with watching TV almost gets him caught several times.
Yeah, Patches yelling at the TV, "Go get him! He's not dead! He's just playing! That's his trick, you know."
It's like, you know, kids watching pro wrestling or something.
Yeah, it's really cute. And I should be annoyed that it also kind of grinds the movie to a halt as far as it doesn't really move the plot forward in any way.
It doesn't add anything. It really doesn't.
But it's such a sweet scene, and you really get a sense of them as a family. Mm-hmm. And how Pongo and Perdita as parents.
Yeah.
I love
the part where Patches kind of said, "Come on, Thunder, rip his gizzard out." Like, where did you learn that language? Not from your mother. Looks at Pongo and he just smiles like.
Yeah. I like that. That's probably my favorite sequence in the film. To be honest, just because it's so sweet and homey, and I like sitting around and watching TV with my dog, and you know, makes me feel happy. So yeah, definitely we give this one a stamp of magic. Still there, not perfect, but you know, worth it. Yep. Worth a rewatch.
So now we really have to start. Working on your dog's matchmaking skills.
Yeah. Darn dog. Also, just, you know, haven't been able to get to the dog park because there's still a pandemic on. I don't know if you've been noticing that as a thing that is still happening in the world because we can't get our stuff together.
Yeah. So just more time to watch classic Disney movies. I think... that's all we can talk about of 101. Oh, one thing I do want to mention before we sign off. Of all the characters in this movie, only Cruella De Vil is in the parks. That's it. You don't see Roger or Anita. You don't see walk-around characters of Pongo or the puppies. You just see Cruella. And... that says a lot about that character.
And I still say it's all on the basis of that song.
And whoever they get to portray Cruella really hams that up and really enjoys playing that character. You can always tell. And people will bring their dogs to the Disney parks to either meet Pluto or meet Cruella. Says a lot about someone where you're bringing your dog to Disney to meet Cruella.
Come on, say you want to make a fur coat out of my dog. Just say it. Come on, for posterity.
Like, what's your dog's name? It's a purse. It is Shawl. Look up, honestly, go to YouTube and look up Cruella de Vil interacts with dogs from Disney parks, and it's hilarious. Especially the parts where you can tell that the actress, the cast member, really does love dogs and is trying to stay in character. I know that would probably be an impossible thing for you if you had to play Cruella.
Yeah, I could not play Cruella. I mean, I could play Cruella in the abstract. I could not play Cruella if you put a dog in front of me. I would just be like, "Oh, puppy!"
So yeah, that's one last thing I wanted to say about this movie. So yeah, I think that's all we could say about it. We actually wrapped this one up in pretty rushed record time, and a lot of it had to do with this really loud little plot in the movie.
Well, yeah, we're missing an entire third of the movie here, so yeah.
Yeah. Go watch it on Disney Plus. Go watch it. I actually own this movie on Blu-ray. Again, the smudges are still there on the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is definitely a Disney classic. Go watch it if you haven't already. Watch it if you have watched it before and relive that classic.
Speaking of, what's up for next week?
Our next movie technically was not a Disney movie when it was made. It was later acquired. Have you been paying attention to certain commercials that may have come out for Disney's productions in the last week or so? Because I don't know if you heard, but there's a new Muppet series coming next week on Disney Plus. So in honor of that, we are going to go back to the original Muppet movie in honor of the new Muppets Now series on Disney Plus. Jim Henson's first attempt at a full movie.
Yeah, his full-length feature debut there.
The Muppet Show had been going on for a while. He had done several television specials.
Yeah, but Sesame Street was already a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Had been going for a while. Of course, he had years of smaller shows and also lots and lots and lots of commercials that he had done. Various other projects, short films. But this
you
was his
like
first
Wilkins
feature.
Coffee.
I love Wilkins Coffee.
So yeah, we're gonna be talking some Muppets next week. Not just the movie, but, you know, whatever else we can think of at the time, but mostly the original Muppet movie. So join us for that. So, yeah, that's all we got to say about 101 Dalmatians. Next week, the Muppet movie. Come back for that, and we will talk to you all next week. Bye!
Tuesday, I'm hungry. So hungry.
Go to bed, Kiki. But I'm not tired. I'm hungry. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Rewatching the Magic. We invite you to keep the magic going by joining the conversation online. Find us on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic, on Twitter at Rewatch the Magic, and of course, find all new episodes at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Until next time, remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.